folks, and welcome or welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again, and this podcast was brought to you, among others, by Emil Gorgis, a Tokyo real estate agent who specializes in serving international or mixed nationality families looking for the perfect family home. So Emil's in Australia. He's been living here in Japan for the past 2 decades, 8 years of which he's been actively buying, selling, and managing real estate properties in the city on behalf of his own family and a great many happy clients. And he also acts as a mortgage broker on behalf of his clients. So his company has a dedicated loan officer in many of the Japanese mega banks. And if you're a regular listener, you probably already know him from our JREP, the Japan Real Estate Experts panel sessions. So you're probably already aware that the man is an absolute fountain of wisdom on all things related to real estate in Japan, and in particular to family homes, the greater Tokyo metropolitan area, and mortgages. And most importantly, he's incredibly generous with his time and advice, which he's more than happy to provide at no cost or commitment to anyone asking. So if you've been thinking about buying your home in Tokyo, but you've been sitting on the fence for a while, or if you just want to have a chat in English with a real expert, drop him a line on emil.gorgis, that's emil.gorgis, emil.gorgis@tokyorealty.jp. Hit him up today and start exploring your options. All right, so for today's episode, we've got a bit of a treat for you. If you've been following us for a while, you probably remember me harping on and on about our first business networking and games event, which was held here in Fukuoka City last December. And you may also recall that one of our speakers was Mr. Jason Ball, who's the owner and admin of the Business in Japan community, which is the country's biggest English business networking group, now with well over 70,000 members. Now, Jason gave a fantastic presentation, followed by an equally fantastic Q&A session at the event. And today's episode is the audio recording of said presentation. Now, while this could seem a bit off topic to our main focus here on the podcast, it's really not, because whether you're living here or overseas, if you're buying, selling, and managing any kind of real estate properties in Japan, you absolutely will need to build, maintain, and nourish professional relationships. And because, as we've mentioned here on the podcast time and time again, Japanese professionals place great emphasis on the proper way to do things. And the real estate industry, if anything, is even more rigid in this regard, being quite old school in nature in the land of the rising sun. So everything that Jason speaks about is actually crucial for anyone hoping to be active in this arena. And while he starts off more generally discussing the art and science and global nuances of business networking anywhere in the world, he quickly leans into the factors that make Japan and relationships between Japanese and non-Japanese professionals unique. Now, we'll link to this presentation's video as well in the episode show notes. So if you prefer the video format, as well as to Jason's previous appearance, we'll link to that in the show notes as well. Going back a few good years now, when he spoke to us here on the podcast about starting a business and finding work in Japan. And on that episode as well, he shared plenty of golden nuggets that anyone can benefit from. So be sure to check that one out in the show notes as well. All right, lean back, tune in, enjoy this information-packed session, and I'll see you again on the other side.
Jason is Australian, lives in Tokyo, and he's the founder? Or just the
Actually
owner?
Not, but no. The owner of Business in Japan.
Yeah, so the owner of Business in Japan, which is Japan's biggest English business networking online community. About 70,000 members now, right?
So just about to hit 70,000.
Yeah, and he's been at it for a very, very long time. So Jason is going to be talking to us about...
Well, I guess I'll just start with, I'll tell you about myself, but I'm going to be talking about how networking or people relationships have been a big part of my success or progress in Japan. And I had a very atypical landing. I wasn't studying Japanese at university. I wasn't into anime. I did do some martial arts, including karate, but I was doing Chinese martial arts before that. And so I didn't teach English, and I got invited to come and work for someone. So I also don't have a degree, and 18 and a half years later in Japan, my Japanese is still not very strong. I couldn't do a job where it was a critical requirement to have Japanese. And yet, I've progressed through a career and gone up and up in salary and been able to choose the direction that I've wanted to go while I'm here. So I'll tell you a little bit more about my background. I am Australian, as he said, and I came here Golden Week 2003. And touched down at 10 p.m. I think it was on a Saturday in Golden Week. Picked up by my friend and employer, and by 7 a.m. the next morning, I was disconnecting computers on Morgan Stanley's trading floor, and was basically hardly slept that night. Had to work out how to get from Yorga in Setagaya out of Tokyo into inner Tokyo, and it's been a fun ride since that day. And immediately, I needed to manage and grow and manage a list of engineers that we could call on to disconnect these computers. It's called Move Add Change, or IMAC. So whilst I did do networking in Australia, and my relationships with people were the reason that brought me to Japan and also fed some of my success before coming to Japan, really it was, okay, I'm in a new city, don't speak Japanese, I need to start meeting people. And in those days there was no Facebook. I think Facebook was starting then, but hadn't got big. And same with LinkedIn. And so I had to do that by just getting out amongst the people and finding these engineers. So I was out in Tokyo and meeting some famous people, famous in the Tokyo networking scene, learning from them. And over the years, I've come up with a way that I, looking back on what I did and the sort of advice I give people to when they network. And so I'm going to go through that with you. And of course, LinkedIn is the other big part of what's helped me be successful and what's helped me form this method. I think a couple of people introduced me to LinkedIn around about the same time in February 2004. And I didn't see it as a website. I just saw immediately all the faces of people I knew in Tokyo, mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of people I wanted to know. And so I just dived straight in, and having a very local area focus, I used LinkedIn extremely proactively to go out and meet people. And in those days, all in person, and networking events. When I say that word, people usually think of big events, and there's nothing wrong with big events. I love big events, but networking to me was more about the people, who I wanted to meet, how I was going to meet them, and the events themselves were just one part of that. All right, so, and then when I finished, I'll give you a few ideas that I've come across for how Japanese people and foreign people interact in business. And there's a little anecdote that I got from a friend of mine, Tim Sullivan, that's relevant to this weekend. And he was working for Honda in the US, and he evolved into being an intercultural consultant, and he's now retired in Japan, but he lived in the US for a very long time. So I'll tell you a little story about that as well. And then we'll do Q&A, just anything you want to ask me. So without further ado, so number one on the list of why you want to network, or if we leave that networking concept aside, why you want to go out and create either personal or professional relationships is do a sit down and understand what you want to get out of networking. If you do that, if you know what you want, that's your important anchor of what's in it for me. But then you can leave that behind and move forward with another person focus. And that you want to achieve can come up naturally in conversation. You never lead with it. It could be, if it's personal, you could be looking for a life partner. If it's business, you could be looking for a job maybe, or you're in sales. That sort of stuff you shouldn't lead with. It's going to be something that comes up naturally. It's very easy, especially when you go out and meet people for the first time. They ask you the same things. In Japan, it's all very quickly formal with the business card. There's good things about business cards, but it does change the dynamic, and not just in foreigner networks, networking events, but Japanese ones especially that I've been to, all Japanese, very structured, organized. Cards come out, and it takes quite a while for the discussions to relax and that coming up in a conversation thing to move into a more comfortable rapport building, relationship building kind of way. One of the bigger differences that I noticed first with events that happened outside of Japan and then events that happened in, but then inside Japan, very Japanese organized networking events versus the more foreign style of event. So know what you want, and you don't have to know everything, but that you want out of meeting people, because that's half the point. Get out there amongst people and opportunities will come to you. But have a goal, and when it becomes your turn, you'll have that there to put out to people. So it can be, you can have more than one, of course, but you can have your professional and your personal reasons for networking. So have a couple of reasons. And once you've got that, as I said, put it in your back pocket, let it come up naturally in conversation, and then move forward with another person focus. But the other thing about that evolves with you when you do that is your personal brand. And your personal brand can become very helpful in achieving what you want to achieve by your professional relationships and going out there. And a personal brand is nothing but how other people perceive you and your influence on that. The fact that you can actually influence that. You can consciously build towards how you want to be perceived in some ways. And a good question to ask yourself as you think about your personal brand is what are you known for already, and what would you like to be known for, and bringing them into sync with each other. And later, if you enjoy it and it's getting you where you want to go, you'll become the go-to person for something. Is another helpful fuel to your networking efforts that will develop as you go out and do more of it. And so, yeah. So personal branding. Go out there and read some stuff about it. It comes from a book. I don't know, 90s. From a guy called Tom Peters, I think, A Brand Called You. But you know, in the Wikipedia article, a quick Google, Personal Branding for Dummies is a good summary. And just have a conscious understanding of it as you go out and build your visibility and persona out in the world. And then how do you start? So, the tools that we have now are awesome, like things like LinkedIn. But even before then, it's about researching the types of people you want to meet, and where do you want to meet them, and in what vertical or industry. So I'm talking from experience of how am I going to use this LinkedIn thing. For me, I was in project management, so I just opened a spreadsheet and just, where do I want to meet people? It's only in Japan. But if you're in a virtual world now, you might put the places that I'm interested in meeting people. And you could put local areas. You might go Japan or Fukuoka, Japan in your first two columns. And then the industries. Maybe there's a defined set of industries that people are in that you want to meet more of. So verticals. And then companies. Who are the companies in those verticals, in those locations that you want to meet? And literally list them. List all of this in a spreadsheet. And you keep adding to this spreadsheet. So what are the companies? Do they have an office in Japan if they're not a Japanese company? And then within companies, what are the departments and areas, depending on how specific your desire to meet people is, you can dig down into the types of departments, areas, within a company that interest you, or daughter companies if they're a large conglomerate, and keep digging down. The roles within those departments are important, because the step below that is the people. And who are the people in the roles, departments, companies, verticals, and locations that you want to meet? And if you set yourself a goal as you embark on a new, maybe you just arrived in Japan, or you want to start networking from scratch, or you're about to finish university, have a goal of meeting 50 people in person, or COVID times virtually. And if you use this approach, long before you get to actually meeting those 50 exactly the types of people you want to meet, you'll have begun developing this network in exactly the direction you want. And why is that important? It's more important now than always because of information overload. Where do you start? I mean, if you information overload came when email started exploding. Now, information overload is just—it's ubiquitous. It's all about filters, and we've all just learnt to filter in more of what we want and out everything else. And so, if you're going to network, you at least want to network towards a goal and towards a direction, which you can define in the process of who am I going to reach out to, or who would I like to meet. And so, as you start building that, how do you go out and meet people? Obviously, networking events can be a big part of that, and even virtual events. Most people are not, whether it's virtual or in person, they're not very proactive. And somewhere between the guy who goes around giving his card out to everyone and someone who stands in the corner just with the one person they know and doesn't meet anywhere else, there's a balance. Yeah, and business cards are a big thing here, so giving your card and receiving a card is quite okay here. And the other thing that 9 out of 10 people don't do is they don't follow up with that person. So gathering cards, if it's virtual, gathering names, putting them on the list. When you meet people, who do you know in this company, or who do you know who graduated from this program, or you use your goal and what you want to achieve as a way to have these conversations. And being focused 80% on the other person, so that you can understand how you can help them, is going to be important, because when you want to build rapport with people, rapport is nothing but sameness, things that you have in common. And so asking questions is the best way, of course, to understand people. And so digging through with rapport helps you to think of ways you can help that person. And one of the secret questions is, how can I help you? And of course, most people, unless they're looking for a job or they're in sales or their own business, they really can't answer that question. And so the next step is understanding how what they do and the sorts of people that they might like to meet. And then making introductions to people is a great way to start building a strong relationship. You introduce 2-3 people that person wasn't expecting and that they really enjoyed meeting. And suddenly they're thinking, oh, wow, it must be my turn. How do I help him again? And that's where, during that conversation, you pull out the specific way that someone can help you. Oh, I'm looking to meet anyone at Microsoft, or anyone at Netflix that works in anime, or something like that. And then he thinks, what was it again? And if you've said it in a nice, as it comes up naturally in conversation, in a nice, short, sharp, memorable way, he's going to start remembering, okay, that's the right one. So having a growing group of people out there thinking, wow, just introduced someone else to me, or how can I help him again? There are people who are going to take, and they're going to take, but the average person is going to also want to help you. All right, so you're making this list, and people connected to the roles connected to that. it will grow exponentially, and you won't have to track it anymore. And a tool like LinkedIn or a CRM, or if you're an organized person with your phone, you can start keeping it there. And then on the magic of networking happens on the bleeding edge as you grow your network. It's the person who introduces you to that person, bringing people together in small groups yourself, introducing two people, doing it in person or on a call together rather than just by email. This is where the magic happens. And I said earlier, don't lead with what you want. It's now becoming, you're growing this network of people who've heard from you, you've established rapport, they like you. You now actually can turn back into that network and ask specifically for what you want. And the more you've done your homework of helping people, understanding how you can help them, hey, you should meet this guy, or hey, I know a couple of people who are in the same job as you, why don't you grab a couple of people and we'll get people together around a niche reason. And I used to do events under the name of Good People Japan, and I called it micro networking. And that was where I was establishing this, okay, I don't have enough time to introduce one person to one person. So I started bunching them together around common subjects of interest. And often it would be a job role, or the fact that, you know, foreigners, whatever it was. As soon as we had the event, instant rapport with everyone, because we literally all knew we were meeting around a common subject. So that made it a lot easier for other people to start leveraging their networks and understanding, okay. So Good People was a big part of me understanding that rapport and helping bring people together around a common subject of interest is a very powerful way to dig into that group of defined area that you want to head. And so keywords and niche subjects, niche events, these are also all ways to dig in to meet the sorts of people you want. And when you're using things like LinkedIn, keyword searches, looking at a profile, it's not about can I get in touch with that person and meet them, it's about how does that person's work history fit into my spreadsheet, into the sorts of people I want to meet. And you know, which school do they go to, click through, which groups are they in, who are they connected to that you already know. Helps you to network through your network, and again, trying to imagine the next step, who can I meet through that person. And so a common thing about LinkedIn that people say, which is true, is, not many Japanese people use LinkedIn. And it's true, I think must be over 10 million people who are on LinkedIn in Japan, and a small fraction of them are Japanese, probably less than 20%. But if your goal is to meet Japanese people, and in using LinkedIn, how do you meet them? They're not all on LinkedIn. There's so many people on LinkedIn in Japan that if you systematically go through this method and have a targeted way and a reason for networking, some sort of framework to follow, each of those people on LinkedIn, whether they're Japanese or not, know a whole bunch of other on LinkedIn. And so that's a very good way to meet other Japanese people without having to use LinkedIn, without having to have found them on LinkedIn. It's because they're connected to everybody. And if you're out there in amongst the subjects that interest you, if you're genuinely talking to people about how you can help them, a growing list of people within your list are going to become close connections that you can ask at any time, hey, who do you know who's Japanese, who's a management accountant? I've got to introduce a management accountant to this guy. And so you get all these people working with you and for you. And because it's all an other person focus, it's not using anyone, it's helping them and helping the network to become closer and feel more valued. Okay, and so reaching out to people on LinkedIn is daunting to some people, and a lot of people were concerned about, well, I don't accept invitation requests from anyone I don't know, or if someone doesn't write a note on their invitation, then I'm not going to accept it. To me, of course, I personally would not send someone a connection without putting a note, but it doesn't mean on the reverse side of that I judge anyone else who does. I mean, it's basically LinkedIn etiquette doesn't require you to put anything. I mean, it's very easy. You tap the wrong button and the invitation's gone. And even on the web interface, it's most people don't put any note. So putting a note will help. And what you want to achieve, whether it's a note or whether it's an email or whether it's someone's just introduced you to someone, the way you want to introduce yourself, again, is not to lead with what you or who you are and what you want. It's to try and identify that sameness again that you can bring up as soon as possible. But it's also to subtly answer the questions that are in people's mind and make sure that you're not giving off red flags of, oh God, so-and-so's introduced me to him, but he probably just wants a job or he probably wants to sell me something. You can diffuse some of that in the way that you send your email or your message. And if you can't identify some sameness, oh, I see you went to so-and-so university, John said I should connect with you because I went there as well. That's an example of an easy one where you've got something. But if you can't identify anything else, then the word networking comes in. You can say, I'm just networking. I'm networking with people just like you. I'm networking with sales managers, or anything that you give them that they can hang the reason, why is this guy or girl reaching out to me? Give them that reason in the early stages, especially if it's not an invitation, it's actually a message or an email. Just say, I haven't been using LinkedIn for the way I should be. I've been on there for ages. I've just started doing it. So I'd like to reach out to you because I'm networking. It is a good approach. And now all of this, you don't need to know how to do it from the beginning the right way. You're going to learn how to do it by doing it. And so, as I said before, long before you get to your goal of having met 50 people in the space that interest you, you'll get better and better at the research part, and you'll get better and better at deciding how you're going to approach that person. You'll get better with the first message. You'll get better with the first message after they accept. You'll get better at asking, can you introduce me to that person? So you don't have to worry about how comfortable you are with this process in the beginning, because you'll get better at it by doing. And that's where the framework and the spreadsheet helps you understand at least how I'm going to approach this concept of networking and building my network to be in the space and area that interests me, but also so that it's strong and deep and wide. So so learn by doing. You get good at every stage of it by doing it. And if you really do have a strong goal, for example, you need a job or an internship at a certain date, or you're a new sales guy and you've got to start selling, then the next secret is massive action. Don't reach out to 20 or 30 people. Reach out to 200 or 300 people. And once you do that, you start not worrying so much about each of the details, and you accelerate getting good at it by doing. So massive action. How can I help you? Start getting into that, even if you don't you haven't yet had the opportunity to ask them that question in person. Still thinking that as your way of interacting with people, so that you can be looking out for ways to help people. And people really appreciate it, especially when you introduce someone to them that can help them, and they weren't expecting it. All right. So yeah, and I said I talked about information overload. Even when you're doing this, it's the same. It's about filters, filtering in more of what you want, and focusing your efforts on more of the important things, and filtering out or not connecting, for example, with people that you have no interest on, interest in, and filtering out the stuff that distracts you from what you want to achieve from your personal relationship building. All right, so yeah, so massive action will accelerate the whole process. You'll fill that sheet up. You'll start building these relationships, and you'll be able to turn and face this relationship and authentically ask for things. And if you still have concern about that, then maybe spend some time throwing more connections and value. And hey, John, it was great meeting you last year. Damn COVID, we haven't been able to meet up in person yet. How can I help you? I wanted to ask you that. And you then have that approach to 100 people that you've already met, and that by the time you've done that, you're going to feel that network is feeling more value from you, and that you're going to have less concern in the future about turning around and saying, hey John, can you introduce me to that person? And you'll feel completely comfortable, and he'll feel completely comfortable doing it, because you've offered that value. Alright, so before I tell that little anecdote about Japanese and foreigners working together, does anyone have any questions on that, on what I've just discussed? So knowing what you want and thinking hard about that, and there might be multiple things, understanding how you can articulate that in the best low-key, not all about you and what you want kind of way, keeping your personal brand in mind, the influence you have on the way people perceive you, some structure, some framework to capture the research and the direction that you're moving towards. So a spreadsheet works, but I mean, if you've got a CRM or another way of doing it, the concept is a structure and a direction, exactly where you want to, actual location direction, but also the sorts of people you prefer to meet and that will maximize your efforts for networking, at least in the direction you want to head. And then how to go about it, from actual approaches and one-on-one identifying and approaching people, to large networking events, and your strategy for making sure that you do follow up and you don't just have a great event and then think, what was that guy's name again? Make sure that you have a way to get back to them. And so few people do follow up after networking events, and so if you practice and get a good way to, hey, I just wanted to connect with you on LinkedIn, or you're already connected, it was great meeting you for the first time, have a method for doing that, so that you don't lose the value of a great networking event. And then identifying in your local area and your local space niche events that are happening, and you know, software development, there's sales, there's people meeting fellow salespeople. Try and find some niche events. It's a great place to build your network instantly in a certain area, and then introduce other people to each other. And we're all sitting at home now, we can do it all by Zoom, but be involved at least in the beginning, so that you get you can see that experience happening, and you can feel, I'm the one that brought this together, I'm the one offering the value. And then think about doing events yourself. If you want to meet certain types of people, be that person to bring others together. And you can start around a theme that you're interested in, like games or real estate, software development. It doesn't matter, but it's a great way to brand the reason why we are meeting, rather than generically business networking or everyone arrives with their own thing. You've got instant rapport, and if it's 8 to 10 people or less in person, everyone gets a chance to meet everyone. Everyone gets a chance to exchange cards and get a feeling on whether you like that person, and from an on-purpose networker's point of view, much more time and opportunity to identify how you can help the other person. And then massive action. Any of those subjects, does anyone have any questions?
I think your point on almost giving things away before you're expecting anything back is probably most vital, and then proactively managing that through. But over the years, the more interesting things have been the things that have existed and have come back to me on the periphery of my network,
right,
which is quite big. I mean, like, there's a lot of stuff I can do and I give it away and it comes back already, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, that's kind of what I'm expecting. But it's the curveballs, like, for example, like Ziv. I met him in the summer at Lewis's bar and we were chatting. I didn't think in December I'd be sitting here doing this, and that was not why I had gone to Off-Broadway in the first place. But there you are, it's the things that come back to you indirectly that sometimes make the spice of life, right?
Yeah.
But if you don't have your eyes and ears open for it, like, you're going to miss it, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that proactive element is quite vital here. I also have organised networking events, and we used to have, when Singapore, I used to have the Singapore Thursday Night Club. I moved to Fukuoka, we set up for Poker Thursday Night Club. And then in Tokyo, I had the Tokyo Thursday Night Club. It was kind of fun. We had a few rules. We had rule number one, only good people. If you brought someone and we didn't like them, we wouldn't invite you again. And rule number two, I'm sorry about this one, no neckties. And rule number three,
it can come with a bow tie.
Rule number three was no speeches. So don't, because you've all been to networking events where someone corners you and they're trying to sell you like a fax machine or something, and it's like, please leave me alone. I don't want to be here for this.
And leave us alone with a fax machine.
Yeah, leave us alone with a fax machine. We're anti-faxers.
Anti-faxers.
So I think, yeah, putting other people first and like two ears, one mouth, right? Use them in that order.
I have a comment about what you're saying about the goal, like fixing a goal and going to a networking event that are in the field that you're like, you want to achieve, like the goal you want to achieve. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that point if you're in Tokyo, mm-hmm. not mm-hmm. in Fukuoka.
No.
Because in Fukuoka, it's the opposite. You need to leave the door open to any possibility.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's how the networking is going to work. It's maybe something like someone you think, I have nothing to do with that person. Like, for example, like a banking guy. I have nothing to do with the bank guy. But you're still going to do network with that guy because you don't know which door is going to be open.
Oh, yeah.
And that, especially in Fukuoka, is important, I think.
Why do you think it's different in Fukuoka? Because there's less people in each
There is less
segment.
People. Okay. Like, for example, if you target only network events that is in your field, it's going to be the same people, exactly the same people you are going to meet again and again and again and again. And in like 2 months, you're done.
You're done, yeah.
Okay? Mm-hmm. So you have to be open to any kind of field. Mm-hmm. And it's, for me, it's also the meaning of network. Is especially in Kyushu, there is work, but there is no net. So you have a group of people, many, 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 many group of people, no net between. And that's what is killing the business in Kyushu. And is what me, on my level, on my job, I'm trying to stop, actually. So I'm arriving in any kind of business, any kind of network, and any kind of party, I'm here. And when they ask me, I always find a reason, always.
We interrupt this broadcast, I always wanted to say this, we interrupt this broadcast to tell you about Tokyo Family Stays. They're a short-term rentals company in Tokyo, and they offer a home away from home experience, which is just perfect for remote working, quarantining, or if you just need summer quiet to hide away from the world. So they offer a variety of options for families, for corporate relocations, or simply if you're transitioning between homes in Tokyo. Now, the properties are super comfortable, tastefully furnished, fully equipped with all amenities, and they accommodate up to 10 people. So really the only thing you'll need to bring with you is your toothbrush and maybe a change of clothes. They've got fast, unlimited wireless internet, dedicated workspaces, and fully equipped kitchens, and they're just a delight to stay in, a fantastic alternative to Japanese business hotels, which if you've ever stayed in one, you probably know they're tiny, they're noisy. Fine for a night or two if you're on your own, but long-term or with a family, you'll probably feel you're in a jail cell very quickly. So if you want to give yourself a sense of space and freedom by renting a real home with comfortable Western beds, including all the necessities like baby bedding, children's toys, high chairs, you definitely want to reach out to Tokyo Family Stays. They've been at it for over a decade. They're a fully licensed minpaku or short-term stay operator. And as a special bonus for our viewers and listeners, they're also throwing in a breakfast basket upon arrival for anyone who books and mentions the Japan Real Estate Podcast or NTI. And not only for guests, if you're a property owner, you've got an investment property that you want to tweak for higher profits or a holiday home that you want rented out when not in use via short-term stays, drop them a line today. See how they can help you maximize your property's income. And again, as a special bonus to our viewers and listeners, they're also offering a free audit of your existing short-term stay listings without any obligation whatsoever. So feel free to reach out to them at tokyofamilystays.com. Well worth your visit. And again, if you're in the market for a family home in or around the Tokyo metropolitan area, Emil's your man. Don't be shy to reach out to him as well at emil.gorgies, G-O-R-G-E-E-S, at tokyorealty.jp.
So in Tokyo, yes, because it's so many possibilities, so many people, and so many, like on the same field, like for example, like software development, I'm sure there is like hundreds of groups like working around that. So you have time to do only software networking events, but not in Kyushu, not in Fukuoka.
Not in English especially, I think. Yeah.
Also, yes. Yeah. And about the LinkedIn things, why Japanese are not using it? Mm-hmm. Like I went to this big event that is like the Boikai, like the trade company, so it's all the big corporate director connected to international. Mm-hmm. I came back home with 50 cards. Mm-hmm. On 50 cards, only two were on LinkedIn. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So there is a problem because they were on Facebook.
Yeah,
and now they ask me right. They ask me to be friend on Facebook, and I don't want to be friend on Facebook with them. I want to be friend with them on LinkedIn,
right? Yeah.
You know, and that's for me, it's a problem.
Hmm.
The other things I do, like I have also the Excel sheet, I have it, but because I have so many cards, I go to quite a lot of events. As soon as I finish the event, in the taxi actually, I'm writing something on the card about the person, like it can be a completely stupid thing, not interesting, boring, glasses. So you don't want to go to my office and look at my car, but you...
Cute.
Yeah, yeah, see, I can write that, like cute glasses or like interesting haircut. Or like I write such stupid things, but it's how I remember the people. When you meet so many people like that, you need to find a way to remember the people. So that's for you, that's a private thing, but you have to write that. Otherwise, you forget, you don't remember with who you talk and what you exchange. So,
yeah. I'm really interested to hear from our Japanese guests, actually, because it's true that it's very, very rare, or at least much, much less frequent to see Japanese people on LinkedIn.
Yeah.
So, are you guys and girls aware of LinkedIn? Do you know the platform exists?
Mm-hmm.
Do you
yeah, I'm on LinkedIn.
You're on
you
LinkedIn?
Do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're on LinkedIn?
I don't really use it, but
yeah.
I'm on it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Why is it less popular in Japan, I wonder? Are they not advertising? Did they just not catch on? Or?
Well, there's many stereotypical reasons, such as it was launched very firmly in the world, but especially in Japan as a job search site.
Mm-hmm.
So just by having a profile there, it sort of suggests you might be at least open to another job, which doesn't necessarily look good.
Ah, okay.
They took a while before they got the language.
Yeah, there will also get a lot of noise, and I'm not sure how it is in different languages, but as a software developer, I get so many messages from recruiters
yeah,
all
yeah.
the time that basically whenever I open LinkedIn, I really don't have the time to actually filter through anything because it's just going to be so much noise in there, just like, oh, here, we have this nice opportunity, this nice opportunity, and you get this all the time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Might be different on different branches, I'm not sure on that one, but mm-hmm. at least for me as a software developer, it's pretty much, I don't think it's really useful to actually connect and keep connected, especially.
And the other thing to remember is, whilst a lot of Japanese have studied English for 6 or more years, doesn't mean they're comfortable on a website that's mostly in English.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the translation of the site is not even very comfortable. So why would they? I mean, I wouldn't be on a Russian network because I couldn't navigate. And even German, which I studied at school, I would feel uncomfortable trying to navigate and try and work out what this thing is and how it might benefit me.
You're talking to, right? Like, I do have Japanese people who are on LinkedIn and they approach me in Japanese. You know, it's the same as I do on Facebook. I might, you know, if I don't get what they're writing, I might use Google Translate. But
I mean, there's a Japanese version of the Business in Japan group, but it's only got, I don't know, 3,000 members.
Yeah.
But it's just starting to get going now. There's about 3 or 4 guys that post a lot of stuff. But I mean, even as Clubhouse evolved, the types of the ways that Japanese people use Clubhouse is different, a little different to the way that at least Western foreigners use it.
How do you mean?
Well, it's very much we've come to sit and listen to the expert type thing.
Yeah, so it's not a conversation; it's more a presentation.
Yeah. I mean, there's varied ways that people use it, of course, but it started to become obvious that it was different. And it's the same with LinkedIn. I mean, it's hard enough for the average native English speaker to work out where the value is, let alone if you're far in the world, which probably is the bulk of Japanese people, right?
So to our, again, I'm thinking how to bring value to our Japanese guests here. So if you are a Japanese person and you're just starting a company and you do want or need to network with foreigners, whether you want to find them as customers or business partners or whatever the case may be, can you give us like a concrete example of how that initial conversation might start in a way that would not turn off, I mean, I don't want to say prospect because it's not necessarily going to be a client, but what would be, how would you approach, if you're a Japanese person approaching a foreigner, what would be the best way to start the conversation and how is it different from what you usually do, Japanese to Japanese kind of thing?
Yeah, well, first of all, they're somewhat westernized for even being on the platform, right?
Yeah.
And they're somewhat comfortable needing to be comfortable talking to foreigners. I would say approach them the same way as I've said in English, and just say, I'm Japanese and I haven't used LinkedIn much.
Yeah.
Just reaching out for this reason, it'd be great to connect.
And definitely don't start with here's who I am and what I do and what I'm selling, right? Because that's often, because when I attend a business meeting with a Japanese company, it's always, here's who we are. First, let us give you an introduction of our company and what we do. That doesn't work for foreigners. Like if I'm approached that way by a foreigner, I'm immediately feeling like a car salesman, you know, he's here to sell me something. But it's not necessarily a sell tactic for the Japanese, it's just the way they structure conversations, isn't it?
Same with the networking and the business cards.
Yeah.
They have to position themselves and who we are. Yeah. So one of the reasons that it's important to understand personal branding is your profile on LinkedIn is going to tell that to someone. And there's a lot of fake profiles on LinkedIn, even in Japanese too. And so you can automate the entire thing, have the profile set up and then plug it into a browser plugin, and it will go through a network, it'll make comments, it'll do anything. But of course, especially, it will send invitations with nothing or a set phrase or something like that. So whether it's a Japanese person reaching out to a foreigner or anybody reaching out to anyone, the first thing someone's going to do is check the profile. And I understand that a lot of people don't want to share much information on a public website like that. But that's where your understanding of personal branding and the goals that you want to achieve will allow you to just put as much in your profile as you're comfortable with that still starts to suggest you're a real person. And I try and structure the whole conversation of this is who I am and this is what I do and take it a bit further this is how I can help you and this is how you can help me.
Plus, if it's all on my profile, then I don't need to start with introducing myself.
No.
The person can actually just have a look without me pushing it on them, right?
Right, but if you've got very little stuff in your profile because you're not real comfortable yet, then they've got to say something. So, don't lead with who you are and all about you and what you want.
Yeah.
and try to talk as if you already know them, or you're a friend of a friend. It'd be great to meet. It'd be great to connect. So the same advice as I would give anyone, really. And don't worry about your English if you're worried about your English. And if you want to show some more, if you really know that your English is not good, mm-hmm. I would say to mention that. Mm-hmm. You just say, don't apologize for it. Japanese apologize too much, but just say.
Yeah. I'm so sorry this email is late. It's like a minute since I sent it to you. It's not late. Yeah.
Probably don't ask to teach you English.
Yeah. Don't do that. But you can bring it into the message of why you're reaching out. For example, I'm new to LinkedIn or new to using LinkedIn. I want to just reach out to you, even though my English is not strong.
Okay.
And that would be a great way to bring down the level and make people feel, well, this isn't a bot. Mm-hmm. This isn't someone trying to sell me something. It's a real person. It's nice mm-hmm. to get a note. Mm-hmm. And then when they connect, don't jump in and then sell mm-hmm. them yeah. everything. That
not the second message to them.
Yeah, exactly.
I've recently been getting, you can sort of tell how the conversation is going to go. Somebody approaches you, hi, how are you? How are things? How is COVID in your town?
Yeah,
and you know that.
Those are bots.
Yeah.
Usually from Taiwan or Hong Kong or something like that.
That's why
they're starting to widen them. They're in Japan and Korea. And they can automate that. And the outgoing's initial automation. But then there's people there with a bank of computers. What? Once someone responded, and they're trying to get you into probably a love scam, something like that.
Mm. I have a question. To what extent do you need to flesh your profile out, to back up when you're networking? Like anybody can say, "Oh, I can do this for you." But is it important to show what you can do, or your achievements, or qualifications?
I mean, those people that want to sell you like a profile, are we going to write your profile,
right.
all that sort of stuff. You don't need that. You need to know why you're going to go out there and why you're reaching out to people and what influence you want to have on your personal brand. And that's just one tool. It's an important one if you're doing a lot of networking on there. So I'd just say, put the sort of stuff that supports the way you're approaching your network, and don't put any more. For me, my network is found me all my jobs, so I'm very specific, and my profile's quite long. And LinkedIn gurus would say that my style of profile's not the way you should do it. But for me, it's a part of my control over my personal brand. But in terms of getting a job, I want people to know my actual individual contribution in each role.
Yeah.
So I've listed it, and all of my jobs have come from
personal connections. Depending on the industry.
But put something. Try to show a bit of personality, or at least show that you're an authentic person.
Mm-hmm.
So I because of my known degree, not strong Japanese, in the beginning, not a clear career path. Recruiters didn't knock down my door. My network was where all of my jobs, and even the job I'm going for now, it's all my network.
Mm-hmm.
The job I've had for the last 6 years, and the rise in income has all come from my network.
In terms of branding in general, whether it's yourself or a phone or whatever it is, you need two key things. One, you need to be able to ensure that there is mental availability. That is, people remember you.
Sure.
And you don't need a long speech for that.
You can be
quite punchy and people don't remember. And then secondly, you need, in product terms, you need product availability.
Yeah.
You need to physically be able to buy it. Those are the two key things for any branding.
Yeah.
So you don't have to flesh your profile out. It could be quite punchy and quite neat and tidy.
Yeah.
And it would be memorable.
Sure.
But then, of course, if you weren't turning up to networks or you weren't then managing on LinkedIn, there would be no physical availability of you, right?
Of course, yeah.
So I think that's always quite keen to keep in mind for branding. Because by the way, branding can be so complicated, but it's not that complicated at the very base level.
One of the things that Jason was saying, and that works for all kinds of, I think, business endeavors, not just networking, is give away a lot of stuff for free, like help people and then contribute people without making a sale. Just because the more you provide information without charging or anything or without getting anybody to sign a contract, the more you're going to be remembered as, oh, that guy who knows about that or that girl who knows about that. Like, the amount of people that just reach out to me, like if I know somebody who wants to find some sort of business connection in Japan, Jason automatically comes to mind as the business connector guy, because he just does that, and he does it on a regular basis, and he does that for free. Same with real estate, right? Like, I'm the Japan real estate guy who speaks English just because I keep putting stuff out there and answering people's questions and giving them advice. It works. I mean, it sounds like you're giving away best stuff for free is a bad idea, but it's actually one of the best ideas, I think.
And you soon learn when people don't respond when you need help, right?
Yeah.
Just cut those people out. Mm. They're there, and it will happen, but you give it away and it comes back. If it doesn't come back, you don't need to do business with that person anymore.
Mm. And it's a bit of a marketing document, your profile. So building personal brand or brand in general. But it's also, you can give people the words that they will later remember you by using your profile. It's like the 101 of marketing is, if you've got a product that's for working women who don't have a lot of time to cook, you say this product is for working women who don't have a lot of time to cook. So you could say, I am a videographer who specifically does this, with a wide range of experience, but who specifically does what you guys are talking about.
Yeah.
Give them, so that, and then one thing that LinkedIn and other social networks allow us to do is to manage a much larger amount of relationships. I mean, a decade ago or more, it became clear to me that I would meet people and we'd just start talking as if we were the best of friends. But it's like 2 years since I last saw them. But it doesn't matter if they can see you. There's some activity going on. It's your chance to be, it's a living, breathing. It's not a static profile, right? It's your presence that's is important. And as Zhu was saying, if you want to be known for something and have it be less about your stepping out and approaching as you're networking, and you want to start turning it around where people come to you, not only have you built the strong network that you've helped and started to come back, but after you get known for something, then people start referring people to you, people start searching, and so it's a powerful thing to have a presence. And I don't know how to handle the Facebook versus LinkedIn thing. I think in some ways, though, it's good that they're not on Facebook using it like LinkedIn. They're on Facebook using it like Facebook. So it's a chance to...
get to know them personally a lot better.
Yeah. And some of the...
Look at their cats and stuff.
Yeah.
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 That going on.
Yeah, but you can look also at your cats and your privacy. So, I blocked all my personal information.
Mm.
I used to have two Facebook. I used to have one professional and one personal. Yeah. And I used to separate correctly both. And I had like 800 contact on my professional Facebook, like choosing carefully. And Facebook, 2 years ago, deleted it. Without any further notice, I just lost my professional Facebook. And I contacted them like many, many times. And said, what have you done? And they don't answer.
No.
And there's no way to get my Facebook page. And people say, oh, you erased me. So everyone came to see me and say, you erased me. No, I didn't do something.
But I totally agree with you with the whole network thing. And what I'm saying, take some control over the efforts that you're doing as a networker or in networking towards a goal. But that's how you reach people that are not visible to you, is by the connections between people.
Mm.
And especially in Japan, it is that older Japanese guy or someone who's not related to your industry that can introduce you into a wider network that doesn't exist on LinkedIn or that is a great... connection to have, even in a business sense, even though your relationship with them is personal.
Mm. And you know that in Fukuoka, these important people, they gave you their card, And when you arrive at home and you look at the card, there is no mail address on it. That's crazy. Yeah. Is it? What the point? You need your mail address.
But it's like, it's like
what they do with the fax, right? They do the fax all.
They fax you my email.
They don't need an email. They do. And they've also got a secretary to open the fax.
I mean, the Japanese Minister for Cyber Defense, he also have never touched a computer in his life, right?
No, because they give you, exactly, there is the phone number and the fax number, but no mail address. So that's true, actually. Yeah. They expect you to call or to fax it.
You can send them a picture of your face. With your email address underneath it.
I think that it's exactly like Ashley was saying, that the magic happens on the peripherals of your network, right? Because if you go out there and you list, you know, like Jason was saying, yes, make a list of industries and interesting people, but when you come across someone, if you immediately file them in your head, like, okay, that's he's not going to be a customer or she's not going to be a business partner, so I don't really need to communicate with them anymore, that's the worst mistake you can make, because the best business connections will come via a person who has nothing to do with your business industry and just happens to know one, someone, and then he happens to remember that you were dealing in that, and he connects you because he likes you. Right. And that's really where that really is where the magic happens. I agree.
And you have to make friends. Yeah, it's really like don't. It's too polite. Like most of the time, Japanese people they stay in their business position, very polite, with like a very code. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the script on the Japanese way of saying. Say no, be friendly. Mm-hmm. Like so people can remember you also and. And become friends. It's like the goal is to become friends, actually. So.
But one last question for me. How about on the other end? Right? What are we as foreigners doing when we approach Japanese people for the first time that is maybe a no-no that we're just not aware of?
Too direct. I mean, the stereotypical stuff in that sense is true. I mean, I know foreigners speak great Japanese and they've been here a long time, but they're still incredibly direct to Japanese people. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, just and you can solve that by not being about you and what you want up front. So. Yeah, I mean, there's so many nuances of meeting Japanese people. I mean, a lot of us as foreigners meet a lot of Japanese people who are quite comfortable and like foreigners.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But then, and you can interact with them in different ways than you could to someone who's new to them to be around foreigners, even though they might even speak English. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, be polite and take things easy. Yeah. So on the Japanese and foreigner thing, I've got that little anecdote story. But why do foreigners quit Japanese companies is a good insight into the way.
Definitely.
What foreigners find weird
can be good.
They feel they don't get praise enough, and they probably. Incorrectly think it's because they're a foreigner when really the Japanese company is not praising anybody, right? Mm-hmm. And if an employee's got high potential or they're grooming them for management or they're in management in a low level and they want to get, they're going to put more pressure on them and give them less praise here. Mm-hmm. So people leave those sorts of companies
because what the foreigner is
they don't feel appreciated.
Okay, so then we're expecting more compliments and like, oh, what a good job you did today.
Yeah, the unspoken stuff that makes you feel of value.
Yeah.
Doesn't come.
I quit it like that actually.
Really?
They didn't say thank you, and I left. No, we had this very very big event. It was huge, like a lot of important CEO came, like for him, like a Peace Nobel Prize came. It was very huge, like 3 days in the big hotel with more than 500 person. We were three women to take care of the event, and the two of my colleagues, they got the influenza, like one of the biggest influenza, because we were in Bangladesh just before, and they got the influenza in Bangladesh. And so they were out for like the almost 2 months before the event. That was crazy. And so I almost did everything by myself for 2 months, and that was crazy. So the event was not perfect, but it went smooth. We didn't have big problems, like 3 days event.
500 person, lots of CEO, and I was like, cool. And so we had this meeting with the boss after the event to say, oh, yeah. And the guy said, I was not really happy. He said that. And I said, what? Not happy? You're going to at least say thank you. And he did actually the group things, the Japanese way, talking to everyone, to not point fingers to people. And I understand that. But I was at least saying, he went, well, thank you. I was just waiting for the thank you. And he said, you're not going to say thank you? And he said, no, because he was very proud. Mm. And I said, okay, so goodbye. And I didn't come back. No, I don't say that. It's sad. Say thank you, actually. So,
I will remember to say thank you.
That's important. Mm. That's the praising thing that you were saying.
Yeah.
It's important that also to say that when someone do a good job, you say thank you. That's not difficult.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You also should show the prize also that you actually mean it. And if you just, I had similar experience also in the last job here in Japan, and basically we were developing a reservation system for Seikotsuin, like in Charlotte. And I was basically the main engineer. I was more or less the only engineer for a long time, and then we had a couple of Indian engineers who joined in straight from university, and I had to teach them all the time. And I was basically also like going crazy what I was doing about work, and I was basically most told him, okay, give me a little bit more officially responsibility, and then all he was basically telling me, yeah, but you are the mental leader and all this kind of things. And in the end, I'm kind of like, yeah, go, can keep your mental leader or whatever. But don't show me some appreciation, and I'm just going to work for myself and actually I'll put my money. And, yeah, that's how I quit my actually last job. One of the big reasons actually behind that.
Yeah. So, Horenso as well. It's a management practice that's got a positive reason for it in Japan. Mm. It's the way that seniors expect someone below them to act. Okay. So it's one of the reasons people leave companies is they
set out of ho for hokoku and ren for renraku. Mm-hmm. And so far so on. So basically whatever happens, go tell your superior, then take contact with him and discuss with him what to do next.
Okay, so we're not supposed to make any decisions on our own kind of thing. Mm. Is that
I'm not sure if it's on decision making or only if problems occur, but definitely it's related to problems. So if any problems occur, mm-hmm. then definitely make your report it and discuss on
our own. From the foreigner point of view, it's something you can learn to integrate better into a Japanese company by just going ahead and doing it from day one. You'll stand out as someone, wow, this guy knows how to communicate with me as a manager. So it's hokoku was to report. It's just on a process or a result from a junior to a senior.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be a problem, it's not necessarily a decision, it's the what's going on now situation. Mm-hmm. And on a regular basis, so they don't need to know, but by hearing it, the manager feels like he's got a finger on the pulse.
They don't need to ask you anything, they get it.
Mm-hmm. They forget the mu at the end. Ho,
right.
Le, so, mu.
That's right.
Yeah. Renraku takes that to a more specific level on the notifying of the facts quickly, timely, make sure there's nothing surprise. And then Sordan is consult or discuss. That's generally asking for advice or saying, this is what we're doing, what do you think about that? So that the manager feels appreciated or needed, or he's being consulted before, even though he's actually not involved in the things that are happening, it looks like they've come to him for advice.
So the bosses need to feel appreciated, but the staff don't need to.
Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah, but there's one thing that we're not saying here, is like most of the foreigners here in Japan working for Japanese company, they are hired in a position to internationalize the Japanese company, most of the time. So I don't know how many of you like work as a foreigner for a Japanese company or for like an international company sitting in Japan. It's completely different. Because when you work for a Japanese company, you're working to internationalize. So your job is to advise them.
and to give your opinion on how to do things. But then, it's the same of like a whole lens. So, like you give your things, it go on the highest right, and mushi.
Finally, nothing.
There's nothing actually.
Nothing to do.
So I guess most.
Nothing choice.
I've been here for 17 years in Japan.
Yeah.
I know many foreigners who worked in Japanese company. Most of them quit because they are tired. It's like they try for 2-3 years, and then they realize that everything they try for 2-3 years. Don't give anything, like there's no change. And then like all the ideas are like cutting off, like you're working for what? For nothing. It's just like basically a position to say that the Japanese company is internationalizing, but that's it, it's just an image most of the time. I don't want to do like big generalization, but I would say it's quite like, it's over 70% of the Japanese company. And that's sad, that's very sad.
There's a misconception that Japanese people in companies make decisions on consensus, and it's not quite true. The meetings are full of people, and before that, the nemwashi is about consensus. It's consensus on the current situation, the problem, the thing we're approaching, a gengyo, something, gengyo. But then that gets presented in one, two, three ways to senior people who then pick the one that they want. So it's not quite consensus driven. Older Japanese men might put down their wives and say, "This is my wife. She's a bit fat, but..." And then an American might go, "This is my beautiful wife."
And better half.
And foreigners are thinking to the Japanese, "How the hell did you say that about your wife in front of her? My God, is that what you think about?" And the Japanese guy's thinking, bragging. So that can be extended into other areas and ways of thinking. It's not a very common thing these days, apparently. But yeah. So just ending on the anecdote, and this comes from a good friend of mine who did, he worked in manufacturing and he lived here for a long time, very fluent in Japanese, went back to America and worked in the automotive industry as a intercultural consulting trainer and for many, many years, 18 years. And spoke to many hundreds of Japanese and foreigners in events and one-on-ones. And one of the things he used to ask was, what are the challenges of working with the other, the Japanese or foreigner? Mm-hmm. And negatives for 18 years, negatives list. And then he'd say, what are the good things? The negative list was just always massive. And the other one was... the positives was much smaller. One day he was in Kentucky, which is southern US, and the longest list was all the positives. Mm-hmm. And so he dug into that to try and find out, for both sides, both the Japanese and the foreigners, it was bigger. And the relevance to this event is that one of the senior managers said, "Oh, that's because I started doing these Texas Hold'em parties."
Oh, okay, poker.
And it got more and more popular until everyone wanted to come.
Yeah.
And it was obviously drinking, but not just drinking, it was playing games and social events and breaking down the barriers, all that sort of stuff, reducing the pressure of speaking English because it's all social at that point, just sort of flowed back into the company. And then using that, he went back and spoke to many others, and the general consensus was it just made them much more tolerant of the other person, that suddenly they were looking for the positives instead of looking at the differences.
So creating social settings where people can actually communicate on a personal level, not only on the professional level.
Right. But and just giving people the benefit of the doubt, no matter how it was said, it came across... they know their intention was good.
Mm.
And so I thought that was a good thing to finish on.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. As promised, fantastic presentation and Q&A session. Hope you've enjoyed it. And if you'd like to reach out to Jason, we've got his LinkedIn profile in this episode show notes for you as well. Don't be shy. Reach out. Say hello. Introduce yourselves. And as mentioned in the session you've just listened to, you never know what kind of magic might happen at the periphery of your professional network. The trick really is in connecting with others and always leading in, not with what you want, but rather with what you can offer to the person you're reaching out to. So you do that and you'll be well on your way to a successful and fruitful business relationship. Now, before we go, we're also, as always, going to tell you and also link to our other sponsor's website. That's Hiroshi Shimizu, immigration lawyer and administrative scrivener. If you're thinking about moving here on a more permanent basis, or you're already in Japan on some sort of a temporary visa and you want to switch to a longer term or permanent one, or if you're considering setting up a local company or a branch office of a foreign company and you've got any sort of business or visa-related inquiries, or even if you just want to find out what your options are on any of these topics, feel free to contact Hiroshi Shimizu. You can find him at japanimmigrationexperts.com. And he can help you set up a company, apply for any kind of visa, or just provide you with the best advice and extremely affordable consultation related to these topics. And he's already done that for many of our listeners. So feel free to reach out to him. Again, that's japanimmigrationexperts.com, and you'll be well on your way. And that's it from us for today, folks. Hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Japan Real Estate Podcast. Do share it with your networks and please let us know what you think. So leave us a short rating or review on the iTunes store, on Spotify, or just drop us a line in the comment section of wherever you might have found this episode. We love hearing from you. Hope to have you with us again next time. And until then, have a great day or night ahead. Yoroshiku.